The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good evening. Welcome to tonight's book show. And the last normal book show of 2018. Next week at the same time, Wednesday the 26th from 7 p.m, repeated on Saturday the 29th at 8 p.m, so normal times, I'm doing a Best of the Book Show, a two-hour special. The first of two two-hour specials, because I'm doing one the following week as well. So in next week's two-hour special from 7 p.m. on Wednesday, you can expect to hear the likes of Jilly Cooper, Keith Stewart, MC Beaton, Rosie Goodwin, Tessa Dunlop, some really interesting, fascinating people who have written some fabulous books, all people who I've interviewed in this last 12 months. But on tonight's show, we have K.L. Slater, who is the best-selling author of psychological crime thrillers, including Safe With Me, The Mistake and The Secret. Kim is a full-time writer who also writes award-winning young adult fiction as Kim Slater. Her latest thriller, Blink, asks, what if the person you love the most in the world was in terrible danger because of you? Also back with us on the book show is Marion Lee, who worked as a volunteer in Indonesia and has brought us the Petra Minx adventure thrillers The Politician's Daughter and Degman's Legacy. The third in the series, A Holiday to Die For, is now out and is set in Southern Africa. Also with us is Jane Wenham Jones, a well-known author and journalist who regularly appears on TV and radio. She's published five novels, plus a humorous yet useful diet book called 100 Ways to Fight the Flab and Still Have Wine and Chocolate. Her latest novel, Mum in the Middle, looks at the challenges faced by midlifers, like adult children coming back home and the ill health of elderly parents. And finally on tonight's book show is Kyle Mills, a 19-time New York Times bestseller. Red War is the 17th book of Vince Flynn's Mitch Rapp series. Kyle's father was an FBI agent and director of Interpol and was the FBI's lead man in the navigation of the Pan Am 103 terrorist attack. Red War begins with this frightening scenario. How does the Russian president try to cling to power after learning he has an inoperable brain tumor? Could this result in World War III? Stay tuned to tonight's book show on Talk Radio Europe.
The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.
Joining us on the line now is K.L. Slater, who's the best-selling author of psychological crime thrillers Safe With Me, Liar, The Mistake, The Visitor and The Secret. After graduating in 2012 with an MA in creative writing, Kim is now a full-time writer. She also writes award-winning young adult fiction for Macmillan Children's Books, writing as Kim Slater. Welcome to the book show, Kim.
Thank you very much.
Oh, pleasure. Great to have you with us. And which came first? Was it the adult thrillers or the young adult fiction?
It was actually the young adult fiction. I never really set out to write young adult fiction, but I started off on my creative writing MA at university. I did a module for children and young adult writing and found that I really loved it. So after years and years of trying to get published, you know, it's sort of what got me into the publishing industry, really. So I was very grateful for that.
Yeah. And what kind of things did you write about?
Well, I started off, my first book that I wrote under the name Kim Slater for my young adult was called Smart, and it was, I would say, it's contemporary fiction with issues. So there's some difficult issues in the book. It's for readers 11 plus. And I started off with Smart, and it got nominated and won some 25 awards.
Wow.
So, yeah, including nominated and longlisted for the Carnegie. So I started off, you know, my young adult career started off, I never could have imagined so well, really. So after waiting a long time, you know, it sort of came good in the end.
Yeah, so that must have spurred you on to continue writing.
Absolutely. And crime writing was always, as I say, my first love. So I tried to get published for many years in crime writing. But it was actually, Smart started off as a short story on my university course. And you never quite know, what's going to be the breakthrough for you. So anyone that wants to write, my advice would be to try lots of different genres and not pigeonhole yourself too much. You're never quite sure which way you're going to break through.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was your breakthrough crime novel then?
My breakthrough crime novel was Safe With Me. And again, incredibly, it was a dissertation, or it started out as a dissertation for my English and Creative Writing degree. It sounds like I've done, lots of studying, but what I did was I went back to university at the age of 40. So, it really was a key time for me in my writing, because I tried so hard to get published. And I wrote my dissertation, Safe With Me, and the character, the protagonist in it, Anna, was just such a strong character that I wanted to keep writing the book. And that turned into Safe With Me, and that's what got me my my book deal with Bookature, my publisher.
Yeah. So why do you think that first one did so well? What was special about that one, do you think?
About Safe With Me?
Yeah.
Well, I write psychological thrillers, and I've always been a massive crime reader as well. Across all genres, but my favourite is psychological crime. And I think that because I wrote the kind of stuff that I like to read, which wasn't necessarily popular up until a few years ago, it's that kind of ordinary setting, real people, real lives, things that could happen to all of us, sort of ordinary every day. That's the kind of stuff I like to write. And I think and I hope that that just appealed to a lot of readers with Safe With Me.
Yes.
So again, I was really lucky, that it was well received.
Yeah, people in general like to be able to relate to the characters and the situations, and it's great being able to read a book thinking, gosh, what would I do in that situation?
Yeah, exactly, yeah, and to safely read, something awful happening to somebody else on the pages that you kind of feel invested in and involved in, but happily, you can sort of read, sat with a glass of wine and your life's all intact. I think there's something in that.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us about the characters in the new book, Tony and her 5-year-old daughter Evie as the main plot.
Oh, that's right. Well, that book is Blink, and the paperback's just coming out in that later this month, this week actually. So this is about that 3 years ago, Tony's 5-year-old daughter Evie disappears after leaving school. So it's kind of every parent's nightmare, I guess. And it starts off sort of quite sad. The reader knows that the police have never been able to find this child, and there are no witnesses and no CCTV. But Tony, the mother, never fails to believe that her daughter's still alive, and she starts to piece together her memories and the past. And it all starts to sort of, the reader hopefully is drawn in, and the mystery goes on from there, kind of thing.
Well, yes, it is. It will be most parents' nightmare, won't it? That kind of thing. So, do you think people will be reading the book and sort of shouting at the book, no, do this, do that? You're really getting involved.
I'm sure. And what's great about, I think, being an author today with all social media, Twitter and Facebook, you get to interact with your readers. And I do get quite a lot of emails. And some people, they're quite annoyed because they think the character should have acted in a different way. Then other people can see the nightmare. It's my job, I think, as the author, to make people, sort of try and make people see the dilemma that the characters have. We're all quite good at telling other people seeing the people's problems and advising other people what to do. And I think reading the book's no different. But sometimes the characters don't act in the way that the reader would like them to. But that thing that writers say, that you can't always control what the character's going to do once you start writing. And that's the beauty of writing, as I find it. I'm never quite sure what's going to happen until I start to write.
And is the title Blink, does it come, I noticed that the subtitle, Don't Let Her Out of Your Sight, is it the whole idea is, you blink and they can be gone?
Yeah, it is that idea of, you know, you just look away for a second, literally a blink, and your whole life can change. But without giving spoilers, there's also a storyline within the book of a character in a hospital bed who's in a sort of coma, well, appears to be, but it's locked-in syndrome. I actually did quite a bit of research on it, where you can hear everything that's happening, but you can't actually make a move or even blink. So it's sort of on a number of levels throughout the book, that title, which my editor came up with. It was really unusual, you know. I really liked it. It wasn't my first book, but I really liked the fact it was just the one word and it was so meaningful and up to the story.
That's horrendous, isn't it, that locked-in syndrome, to try and imagine that.
Oh, yeah, and that's what I had to do, you know, because when people sometimes ask, when I'm writing characters, if I've got no experience of being in a certain condition or whatever, it's just about imagining, you know, and kind of, as an author, immersing yourself in how must it feel. And just spending, sometimes I find the most powerful thing with writing is to not write and imagine and just kind of immerse yourself in what it must be like, to give it some thinking time. And then that hopefully, you know, comes out on the page and helps it feel authentic.
And do you enjoy all the research side of things?
Yeah, I do really enjoy the research side of things. For my adult crime writing, Bookature are digital first publishers, so my titles come out at the moment at a rate of about 3 a year on Kindle. Now, Blink is coming out this week in paperback by Sphere, so it's all a bit complicated, but the paperback's available, or will be. So when I'm researching, I often start writing the book and kind of research it as I'm going, because I'm writing quite rapidly. And, you know, I often have to research retrospectively. So I work on my imagination of how that must feel. And then I sort of sometimes have to catch up with the research as I go. But I really do, you know, you come across some really interesting things, like the locked-in syndrome was particularly interesting to research.
I bet. Well, if people want to find out more about it, they must get a copy of Blink, which is by Kim Slater, or K.L. Slater, as it says on the book, who we've been chatting to. Kim, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.
This is Talk Radio Europe.
The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.
Joining us here in the studio is Marion Lee, who studied languages at Oxford University, worked as a volunteer in Indonesia, then founded a successful translation company in Canada. Her first Petra Minx adventure thriller, The Politician's Daughter, was published in 2011, the second, Dead Man's Legacy, in 2015. She's back with us on the Book Show to talk about the latest novel, A Holiday to Die For, a pacey adventure novel set in Southern Africa. Welcome to the Book Show, Marion.
Thank you very much, Hannah. It's lovely to be back.
Oh, it's great to see you again. Have you had a busy few years?
I have, yes. It's always busy when I'm writing a new novel, plus trying to fit in, you know, family commitments and travel and everything else.
And was it a conscious thing? When you wrote that first book, The Politician's Daughter, did you think, I know, I'm going to write more books about this character?
Yes, it was always my plan. When I came up with the idea in 2006, it was really to write a series about Petra Minx, although she started life as Sandra Minx. Then I discovered with a Google search that Sandra was a porn star, so that didn't that wasn't exactly what I wanted.
No. So tell us a bit about Petra Minx.
Well, Petra Minx is a young, feisty sergeant in the Marine unit of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Now, she is police, not a Marine. And people, I think, find that a little confusing. But the Marine unit relates to boats. And boating has always been a passion of mine. And so I wanted to incorporate into the novels my knowledge of boats, my experience boating in North America, the Great Lakes, Eastern Seaboard, and so on, as well as my travel experiences in so many different countries.
How lovely. Well, tell us, can you tell us a bit about the boating times? When were you doing that?
Well, actually, until 2017, when our boat was sold. And prior to that, I'd spent 16 years exploring the eastern seaboard of the US, the east coast of Canada, which is Nova Scotia, as far as Newfoundland, two summers spent up in Newfoundland, up the St. Lawrence Seaway into the Great Lakes, 5 years on the Great Lakes, exploring all of them, and then back down from the Great Lakes to New York via the Erie Canal system.
How fantastic.
And then ending up taking the boat to Florida and sadly passing her on to new owners.
Oh, wow. What an amazing experience. And all that time living on the boat, were you?
For the summer. So it was sort of between 3 and 5 months a year. Yes.
Fabulous. You must have learned so much in that time.
I did. And it's so, there's so much history up there. I mean, Dead Man's Legacy, for example, a lot of it is set on the Northern Great Lakes. And in particular, what is now a ghost town called Fayette, but you can still take a boat in there and tie up at the dock. And in the late 1800s, about 1880, it was a place where there were 500 workers from all over the world, all different countries. And as a great, they were smelting pig iron. And then it was exported from there to, you know, to make ships and for all kinds of other uses. So now the whole site is a national park. It is really an amazing experience. And especially staying at the dock overnight for a few days. When the park closes, there are no visitors. And if you're the only boat on the dock, it's kind of spooky.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And this book, even though it's got the character of Petra Minx, again, it's in a completely different location, this time set in Southern Africa.
That's right.
And why did you choose there?
I've been lucky enough to visit South Africa for family reasons many times. And also Namibia twice. And Namibia is just north of South Africa on the west side. So a lot of it is the west coast. Mm-hmm. And you can drive. Namibia is an amazing country. Very few people, a lot of it desert. It's part of the old Gondwana continent, which is probably the earliest continent. It's deserts, the oldest in the world. And you can drive from South Africa all the way into Namibia and, you know, as far north as you want to go, which was the thing I did on one occasion. Second occasion, started off in Botswana and then drove along what used to be called the Caprivi Strip, which is now called, for political reasons, being politically more correct, the Zambezi region. So basically just south of the Angola border along the Zambezi river. You don't see the river, but, you know, you're just south of that. And then through that Zambezi region and down to Etosha National Park. So
it must be amazing. I love to travel as well, but to travel to places where not a lot of other people have, you know, I expect a lot of people react to saying, oh, really? Why are you going there? What's there? It must have a sort of special thing to it.
Yes, I think so. And Namibia, it's the scenery.
Mm.
And a little bit the isolation. You can drive for hours and hours and see maybe two trucks. Once we broke down, well, the tire blew. I think it was on the last day of our first trip there. And actually, we didn't see a single car.
So oh, my goodness.
That was unfortunate. And then we were stuck for sort of 24 hours in this little place where they did everything they could to help and get a temporary repair done so that we could carry on. So
you found the people were lovely as well.
People are lovely. And Etosha National Park, which actually features towards the end of A Holiday to Die For. In fact, my two lots of people sort of converge, two groups converge on safari in Etosha National Park. And it's also one of my really favourite places because you can stay in the park. There are three different places to stay. And then you drive yourself. And I much prefer that because you set your own timetable.
Mm. Because a lot of people do safaris and things, do they?
Yes.
Where it's all taken care of.
Well, that's right. And they typically wake you up with the knock on the door at 4 a.m. Not
wow.
My best time of day.
No.
And then they expect you to, you know, drink coffee, go out for 4 or 5 hours, jolting around in a Jeep or a truck, Land Rover, you know, with other people. And then they bring you back late morning for sort of brunch before you go out again in the afternoon and possibly the evening.
Okay, so it's better doing it yourself, you
yes.
think?
Yes, yeah, you can control your time. It doesn't have to be 4 o'clock in the morning. It's good to be early, though, because you do see, you have a good chance of seeing animals. And if there's been a kill during the night, then you will see that, possibly.
Right. Yeah. So tell us about one of the other main characters in the book, Carlo, who's her Italian friend.
That's right. He featured in The Politician's Daughter. And he was present a little bit, but only through emails towards the end of Dead Man's Legacy. And then at the end of Dead Man's Legacy, I thought, I'd like to bring Carlo back because he has this very mercurial character, personality, and he interacts, I think, very well with Petra. They have a sort of love-hate relationship in a way, although I think he'd like it to be more than he'd like the love side to predominate. But they're always sort of joshing each other and a little bit getting on each other's nerves. But anyway, the end of Dead Man's Legacy, I had Petra accept an invitation to go with Carlo to his cousin's wedding in South Africa. And that's what she does at the beginning of A Holiday to Die For.
Ah, fantastic. So they really do go from one to the other.
Yes.
Lovely. Yeah. And Carlo works for Interpol.
That's right. Yes.
So they do a lot of work together.
Yes, they do. I mean, he, in A Holiday to Die For, he is investigating a couple of things. He's delayed on his way to South Africa. In fact, Petra is very annoyed because he's not there to meet her at the airport. And she later finds out that he was delayed because the conference he was attending, they had an extra speaker fly in. There were illicit diamonds turning up on the European market. So that's something that he gets involved with.
Okay. And when they're there, when they go to South Africa, on the first night, two teenage girls are attacked, and that becomes a lot of the bulk of the story.
That's right. He arrives just in time to witness the attack. Petra's always very concerned about young women, I think because she's a police officer and she's seen so much in her relatively short life, but nevertheless. And these two teenage girls arrived in South Africa from London on the same plane as she did. And she sees them that evening in Cape Town, and suddenly they are attacked down at the Cape Town waterfront. And next morning, she sees them again at the hotel, and they suddenly tell her that they're off to join a group, a higher ground tour. And the people who, two young men who helped them sort of get away from their attackers, have suggested that they be safer joining a group. And Petra is, you know, she's very suspicious.
Mm.
Her antenna begin to quiver.
So she has to look into this then?
Yes, well, she's always very concerned for them. And then when she's at the wedding, the character of Florian, who is the stepbrother to the bride Julia, is very reluctant. Her wedding is stupendous, put on by her stepmother, Sandrine, meticulously organised at a wine estate in Stellenbosch. And then, so you have Sandrine, who's this real control freak, if you like, Florian, Sandrine's daughter, son and stepbrother to the bride, is the most beautiful boy, and I use the term beautiful specifically, that you have ever seen. And he actually is based on someone, anonymous person I saw on a plane in South Africa.
Oh, lovely. I was going to say, is he based on anyone?
He is. He's one of these people that you couldn't take your eyes off. Long eyelashes. He was also travelling with an older man. I'd have no idea what their relationship was.
Yeah.
And that also gave me the idea for Father John in A Holiday to Die For.
Fantastic. So have you enjoyed writing this book?
I have. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Partly because I do love South Africa and Namibia so much. It was a challenge to integrate all these things, you know, the different sides of the plot. First of all, the wedding, setting everything up. And then there's another young lady that Petra is asked to go and see, her boss, of course. Often he has the habit of phoning her and asking her to do things.
Right.
So in Cape Town, he asks her to go and check on this other young lady who's been working at a hotel. And then Petra finds that she's left her job and gone to join a community to do volunteer work. So again, you know, she's very suspicious. So weaving all these aspects of the plot together was quite a challenge.
Yes. So have you already started the next book?
I have some notes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you like to have a little break between each book?
I think I will. Yeah. Yes, I have
good
another,
for you.
Especially with the Petra Minks. I think that I have a book that's about a third written. It won't be as long as these. It's written in diary form.
Okay.
By a dog, actually.
Oh, of course.
And he's called Rounding Huron, which is the tale of a rather dysfunctional couple taking a boat all the way, circumnavigating Lake Huron, one of the Great Lakes of North America.
Oh, wonderful. So I was going to say, is this a little bit based on your experiences? But you said dysfunctional couple, and I wouldn't like to say, I'm presuming that's not you. You don't have to say.
No, but you see so many things when you boat extensively. And
yeah.
You see people trying to back into docks at the marina and not succeeding. I mean, most of the time we were lucky, but, you know, it is. It's a very tense and difficult thing to do under certain conditions.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
fascinating. Well, it's been lovely to see you again. Thank you so much for coming in. If people want to get a copy of the latest Petra Minks novel, it's called A Holiday to Die For, and it's available to buy in the bookshop section on the TRE website. It's by Marion Lee. Marion, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks again so much, Hannah, for inviting me.
The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.
This is Talk Radio Europe.
Online at tre.radio. The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.
Joining us on the line now from the UK is Jane Wenham-Jones. She's a well-known author and journalist who regularly appears on radio and TV. She's published five novels, including Raising the Roof, One Glass is Never Enough, and Prime Time, as well as three non-fiction books. Her latest book is a novel. It's called Mum in the Middle. Welcome to the book show, Jane.
Hello, Hannah. Thank you for having me.
Oh, hi, Jane. Thanks very much for joining us. No problem at all. So I'm interested to hear a bit more about your background, Jane. I presume the journalism came before the writing books, did it?
No, strangely, it came the other way round.
Ah.
I started off writing short stories for women's magazines when I was at home with a baby. And then after I'd written quite a few of those and had them published, I had a go at a novel. And my journalism started because I wrote a few features and articles to promote my first book.
Ah.
And it's a strange thing that lots of journalists would love to have a novel published and don't always manage it. But once you've had a novel published, newspapers and magazines just assume you can do journalism. And so
right.
You get it. So, and then I became a columnist for my local paper, and I still write a column for Writing Magazine. And I write quite regularly for Women's Weekly.
And do you enjoy it all?
Yeah, I do. I love journalism, actually. I think it's because you can just sort of write a piece in a day and see it published the next week. It's a quick fix. Whereas writing a book is quite a long slog. You know, it's some months turning up at the computer every day and, you know, it seems to go on forever.
Yeah.
So I quite like doing the two in tandem.
And you've written a couple of, I mentioned the non-fiction books, you've written some all about writing, Wanna Be a Writer and Wanna Be a Writer We've Heard Of. Do you like giving the advice to people?
Well, the thing is, yes, I do. And it was a pact I made with myself when I was trying to get my first novel published. It took me a very long time. And I heard other authors sometimes giving talks and sort of making it sound as if they got published on their very first try, when sometimes I knew they hadn't. It seemed a bit mean because it meant that the people listening, if they wanted to get published, they were going to be very disheartened.
Yeah.
So I made a deal with myself. I thought if I ever get published, I am going to be completely truthful about how long it took.
Good for you.
Wrote Wanna Be a Writer, and it's got the warts and all story of how I set about getting published when people kept rejecting me. And I can't believe the sort of things I did now, but you know, I was almost a stalker trying to get an agent. But I tell that story, and the book is for people who want to be published or who've perhaps thought that they would write a novel but they haven't actually got around to it, to sort of inspire them not only to write but to keep going when you get rejected.
It must be very difficult for people to keep going after they get rejected.
Yes, it is. It's hard because, I mean, it's something that you've poured your body and soul into, and, you know, you've created something. It's, you know, they always use the analogy that it's a bit like someone telling you your baby's ugly. And, you know, it is. It's difficult. But I do believe that talent will out and cream rises to the top. And, you know, there are lots of probably wonderful novelists around with novels in drawers who just gave up too soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it's difficult for people when they've written, especially if it's their first book, they don't know realistically whether it's any good or not. And they may well have family or close friends telling them they're brilliant, but they don't really know. And I guess if they first start getting professional opinions and everybody's saying no, it must be easy for them to think, oh, maybe it's not any good then.
No. Right, absolutely, that's right. And that's why you need to keep going and get lots of professional opinions, and also not to take too much notice of what your mum says.
Yes, good advice. So your latest book then, Mum in the Middle, it's called. It is fiction, but I believe once you started writing it, a lot of things were happening in your own life that was being a bit of an inspiration to the book.
Absolutely, that's right, because it's about the stretched generation, and I hadn't even heard that term when I started writing the book, but it's about women, say, around 50, whose adult kids, for one reason or another, either have not left home or have come back, and whose elderly parents are also causing problems or needing a lot of help. And I decided when I was starting to write the book that I would have the mother in it get dementia. And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to have to research that quite carefully so that I get it right.
Mm.
And then my aunt, who doesn't have any children, so I'm her lasting power of attorney now, went down with a really severe sort of dementia. She went very quickly. And she's now absolutely, you know, in another place. I mean, you know, she can't communicate, or she's absolutely a shadow of her former self. So I was able to sort of draw on that. And that was quite sort of helpful to me, really, to write it down. And my 25-year-old son has just moved back home for the third time.
Oh, gosh.
Which is lovely, actually. I love having him here. But, you know, he's 25. As I say, three times he's left home. And back he comes.
So why has he come back?
Well, I mean, he went off to university
yeah.
and came back. He was looking for jobs. He had a job in Gibraltar and lived in Spain for a while, which was lovely because I was able to go and have weekends in the sun. But that didn't work out for one reason or another, and I got unwell, and he came home and helped support me for a little while. And then he was in London, but London is so expensive for the kids to live in, and you know, it's just really, really difficult to have anywhere nice to live. So he's now got a job a bit closer to home. And so he's living at home at the moment. I mean, he won't be here forever, but at the moment he's living at home.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, I think it can be difficult for both sides. You know, if he's been used to living away from home and having his independence, it can be difficult to go back home. And then for you as well, having your independence as well with him not being there and then coming back again. It must be nice in some ways, but challenging in others.
Oh, well, we always joke that he slides very quickly into being 15 again. You know, he's quite happy for me. I think this is boys. Quite happy for me to cook the dinner and stick the washing on, you know. I think girls perhaps struggle a little bit more with that. But,
right.
Yes, no, he doesn't have any worries about you know, just going back into role. And so Tess, in the book, she is in that situation that the book begins with her actually feeling lonely because her last child, she's got three, has left home, and she's never ever lived on her own. You know, she went from sort of college to marriage to having kids, and so she's never lived on her own. She's feeling all lonely, and then they start coming back. For one reason or another.
That must be something that a lot of women can relate to, if that happens to them living on their own for the first time after the kids have gone.
Yes, it's been really lovely, the response the book's had, actually. I was just before I started speaking to you, I was just looking at the latest review on Amazon, and people are saying, this is my life, you know, I can really identify with this because my kids have come home or my kids haven't left home. And a lot of people also feeling that whole empty nest thing when their kids have gone to university, you know, just not being ready for how bereft that they feel.
Yeah,
you know, when the kids do go, it is hard. I think I felt absolutely lost when Tom went to university.
And a worry, I suppose, as well.
And sorry?
And a worry as well.
Yes, that they're suddenly away from you, yes. And, you know, they're when you're used to somebody being under your roof and you can, like... I suppose in a way, though, I mean, when they're living at home, if you wake up at 3 a.m. and they haven't yet come home, you sort of lie there and think, oh, where are they? Shall I text? Shall I make sure they're not mugged or in a gutter somewhere? Whereas if they're actually away at university, you don't know what they're up to. So there is a sort of, you know, mercifully you can just sleep because you don't know.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. And also, I understand whilst writing this book, your mother broke her hip as well. That sounds awful.
Yes. Also, my mother, yes, fell over and cracked her hip. She's all right now.
Oh,
but she cracked her hip and her shoulder and her wrist.
Oh, no.
So she was, you know, had to have a pin put in it, and she was needing help, and, you know, but she's very independent, actually, so she's much better now. She's 80. She'll be 84 in the next year. So she's, but she's pretty good, yeah. She's hopping back on and off buses, and off she goes.
Oh, amazing, amazing. And your dad's also developed problems with his sight.
Yes, my dad's developed problems with his sight, and I think actually he is beginning to have memory problems as well.
Oh.
So, it's sort of, I am living that stretched generation at the moment, yes. Though my mother is independent, you know, obviously, she's not quite the same as she was before. She does need a bit of help. And I've got this aunt and I've got my father.
Life's hard, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't like to say it's hard because so many people have much, much worse problems. But it's more challenging, I think, for this generation now than it was generations ago, in that I can remember my maternal grandmother the first time, my earliest memory of her is of this little silver-haired lady whose kids had long left home, who was pretty much retired, used to do the garden and polish the teapot and do a lot of baking and things like that. And I now realise she was actually younger then than I am now.
Wow, that's scary, isn't it?
It is. And when I think that now, you know, as I say, my child's at home, I'm looking after my parents, her parents were long dead. It used to be that way, that, you know, in your 50s, you were pretty much kids off your hands and it was your time.
Yeah.
And it's not like that now.
No, no.
Still often women are keeping, you know, holding down jobs. They're looking after their relatives. I say they're often financially supporting their grown-up children because many kids can't afford to rent anywhere, let alone buy anywhere, if they're not helped out with the deposit and the first month's rent. And, you know, it's a very expensive business, isn't it? You know, setting up home.
But it's great that you're sort of sharing your experiences, although it's obviously in a fictional way with Tess in Mum in the Middle. But I think, as I said, a lot of people will be able to relate to what you're going through in some way, either with the kids coming back home or looking after elderly parents. I mean, that's something that unfortunately most people will have to go through.
Yes, I think there are very few women in their, or adults, men and women, in their 50s at the moment who aren't doing one of those two things.
Yeah.
Either supporting elderly parents who live longer and longer and longer, or looking after their children.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, if people want to find out more, they can get a copy of Mum in the Middle. It's out now. It's available to buy on our website in the TRE bookshop section. It's by Jane Wenham-Jones, who we've been chatting to. Jane, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Hannah. It's been lovely to talk to you.
The Book Programme. Presented by Hannah Murray.
Joining us on the line now for tonight's book show is Kyle Mills. He's a 19-time New York Times bestseller. He's with us to talk about his latest book, Red War. It's the 17th book of Vince Flynn's Mitch Rapp series, which Kyle began writing following Flynn's death in 2013. Welcome to the book show, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us. And tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to be a writer, can you?
Yeah, probably a little unusual. I work for a bank, and I was kind of a fanatical rock climber and realized one day that I never did anything creative. So I decided I was going to build furniture, but I didn't really have any tools, and I'm not very handy. So I decided to write a novel. I didn't really have any thought that it was going to get published, but I thought it would be a fun exercise. I did it, decided to try to get it published, and it later became a national bestseller. So that started me on a fairly lengthy career that I didn't expect.
Mm. And presumably the type of things that you write about, the subject matter, was very much inspired by your father and his career with the FBI, was it?
Yeah, my father was an FBI agent for like 25 years. He was the legal attaché to the United Kingdom and the director of Interpol. So I was always surrounded by, you know, FBI, CIA, MI5, MI6, and people like that. So I had a lot to draw from in the thriller genre.
And there's also a bizarre connection between Vince Flynn, Mitch Rapp, and your father in terms of the Pan Am flight.
Yeah, the character got into the CIA because his girlfriend had died on Pan Am 103. And that happened during my college graduation dinner in London. And my father's assistant came in and said a plane had gone down in Lockerbie. They thought it might just be a mechanical, but weren't sure. And it became clear that it wasn't. And my father ended up moving to Lockerbie and coordinating the U.S. response to that.
Wow. So did you must have kind of absorbed quite a lot of, I mean, I presume he wasn't allowed to discuss much with you, but even so, you probably got a bit of idea as to what was going on, did you?
Yeah, you know, you did hear a lot of stories, older stories from people and stuff, nothing, you know, classified when you were a kid, but also just the characters themselves. You know, a lot of those people were very much larger than life, and kind of an interesting way to grow up when you're a little boy. You know, it's so romantic.
So tell me about this latest book then. It's called Red War. It's very much about Russia and the president of Russia, the character that you've created, but again, also inspired a little bit by Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, a lot, really. When I created that character, the president of Russia, a few years ago in the book Order to Kill, I was doing a lot of research on Vladimir Putin, and I thought, you just can't make this stuff up. So I changed the name and basically left the description. His history, his personality are all very much Vladimir Putin. So this one assumes that he gets brain cancer and he has to try to maintain power through his treatment, which is really difficult. He's created a lot of enemies and he's obsessed with falling out of power and somebody putting a bullet in his head. Obviously, dictators who have fallen out of power, like Gaddafi and Hussein, haven't done well at that point. So the idea is here, what would he have to do to, you know, get rid of the enemies that he thought were close enough to him to get to him, to distract the West so they wouldn't know he was weak? And at one point, he decides invading the Baltics would be a great answer. And I found that kind of an interesting idea because he doesn't have to win. The idea is simply to create as bloody a war as possible as a distraction.
Mm. And sadly, do you think then something like this is quite realistic in the way that Putin behaves?
Well, it is. It always worries me that he's getting older. You know, something's going to happen, it's going to weaken him, and he's really not put himself in a good position to not have sort of iron-fisted control over that country.
Mm. Is it a worry, do you think?
I think it is. You know, I mean, even with people like the Kims and stuff, some of these dictators are gathering a lot of power unto themselves in their country, and Putin is somewhat unique in that he also has an incredible ability to project power. So you have all this power wrapped up in one person who may or may not end up being stable in their old age, or may not be stable now. Who knows?
Mm. So tell us more about the character of Mitch Rapp, can you?
Sure. Mitch, it was created by Vince Flynn many, many years ago, and we've followed him since he was in college to now when he's in his mid-40s and his evolution through the FBI, or the CIA, rather. And he, I think he would call himself an assassin. That's probably the best description of him. He's the guy you send to take care of problems that can't be taken care of in any other way.
And how is it taking on a character that someone else has created?
You know, I thought it was going to be much harder than it was, but it's interesting to go back. I had been a fan of Vince's forever, but I'd read his books, you know, over 20 years or something, not necessarily in order. So I went back and read them all in one push in order. And you came to really know that character. He'd done such a good job drawing him. And then you had 6,500 pages following him from when he was a kid to kind of, I guess, 44 be middle age. So in a way, I think I know this character better than any character I ever created.
So all the information was there for you to go on.
Yeah. You know, during that, I think, you know, 6,500 pages roughly of story, and I took 140 pages of notes. So everything Mitch ever did, every gun he ever used, you know, right down to Vince's sort of style of creating action scenes and word choice, because I really wanted fans to not really see the transition, for it to be really smooth.
Mm. And how's it gone down so far with the fans? It must be a bit of pressure for you, is it?
Yeah, the first one in particular, you know, you didn't know if the fans would even want it continued.
Yeah.
You know, it could be that they were rooting against me. That was not the case, though. People really loved that character. They wanted to see the character continue and Vince's legacy continue. And the first book, he had written three pages of it, and I put him in a place that wasn't at the beginning, and I basically told everybody, try to guess which three they are, and nobody has yet. So I feel pretty good about that. And Red War just debuted at number one on the New York Times list, so people seem to really be enjoying them.
Great stuff. So how many more do you think there's going to be? Is that decided?
No. Just I think it's still fun, and I feel like it's still fresh, and Mitch has a lot of places he can go and a lot of things he still has to contribute. So hopefully a long time. It's hard to, me as a thriller fan, it's hard to imagine a world without Mitch Rapp.
Yeah. And do you read a lot of books in a similar genre?
You know, not as many as you would think. I spend so much time doing research for these books. I do a lot of that. And to be honest with you, my criteria now for novels is that they're in Spanish and they're not too hard for me.
So your listeners might not know that you live in Spain. How long have you lived in Spain for?
Only 4 months.
Ah, and how are you finding it?
Oh, we love it. It's been great. But the whole learning Spanish is turning out to be even harder than I thought.
Yes, it can be tricky. So what brought you here to Spain?
I just really love it. I always have. We've come back here many times. And in truth, one of my bucket list items has always been to speak a foreign language with some level of fluency. So I thought this was my chance. I had a year I could come over here and really give it a shot, and we'll see how it goes. It's got a shaky start.
Oh, well, best of luck with that. It's a great thing to have on the bucket list for sure. If listeners want to get a copy of the latest book, it's called Red War, and it's by Kyle Mills, who we've been chatting to. People can buy a copy of the book in the bookshop section on our website, tre.radio. Kyle, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The Book Programme, presented by Hannah Murray.